Hello and welcome to the Straight Popcorn Podcast. My name is Brock Vincent Sharp, and with me is it's been a long time coming, brother. Yeah, we were like failure at the drive-in. Like, we only did like a short-lived run and just completely broke up.
Well,
isn't that what happened?
I just couldn't imagine it getting any better. So, you know,
yeah,
we separated for a little while, and you got sick, and then that brought us back together, you know, in unity, and now we're here.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but nobody's gonna make a biopic about my sickness because it was just a bacteria infection. So. Nothing controversial there, you know, so, all right.
I did have a sex change operation, though, so.
That's okay.
Yeah, it happened. And then I went back, so.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
So, you went back to get the meat, I understand.
Yeah.
I understand.
Pretty much. It's complicated, but, you know. Anyway, I guess we should really talk about a very, very dear person to both of us. I mean, I know he's really dear to me. I think you definitely felt it too, but Harold Ramis.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. I mean, I knew the guy because he babysat me growing up. And, I mean, you know, on my graduation day, he said to me, he's like, you know, you're going to have a lot of people tug you in all kinds of ways. But, you know, at the end of the day, just think it over with the foot long from Subway. So. No, I didn't know the guy, but.
Loved Harold Ramis, though. In fact, out of the Ghostbusters, he was my favorite.
He was mine too. I loved Egon. I actually had the little Egon Real Ghostbusters action figure, which looked nothing like Harold Ramis.
No, he had like
all that. All that happened.
It was blonde and had like the really, really curly top. You know, like this weird, like '50s kind of, I don't know, '80s inspired hairstyle, I guess.
What was up with that? Why did they do that?
I don't know. Peter Venkman didn't look like Peter Venkman.
No.
You know, Winston Zeddemore had no mustache.
But you can always guarantee the black guy is going to look like a black guy. I mean, come on.
Yeah. So,
sorry, I didn't mean that. Racist and stereotypical
Ray,
Hollywood.
Either. I would say actually on the cartoon, Peter looked more like Ray. Just, you know, I don't know. It was weird. But,
yeah.
They also had the multicolor uniforms, which I was kind of drove me nuts as a kid. I don't know. I was kind of a stickler for, like, the uniforms. Like, no, I don't want this light blue uniform. I want the one in the movie. I want the tan uniform.
Yeah, it was really kind of lame if you think back on it.
Yeah.
Like, Real Ghostbusters, like, they had the actual license, but yet they didn't do it justice. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I loved it, though. I mean, I watched it all the time. Like, I think there's a four-year difference between me and you, or you and me, rather. I was like, my mind wanted to say the correct order on that, but of course my mouth ended up screwing up that operation. Anyway, but yeah.
No, I loved it. I loved it when it was out. I just now looking back on it, I'm like,
it does not live up. Yeah, it definitely did not hold up upon viewing years later. it was not their best series, but I loved the movies. Loved the first one. Know a lot of people really kind of hated the second one. I loved it. I've still watched it since. And I'm still like a big fan of it, but even outside of that, you know, just I don't know. I mean, there's been a lot of his films over the years that I just fell in love with, like Stripes. You know, I'm having a hard time remembering actually some of the films that he's done. I mean, do you remember?
Well, I mean, he definitely directed Groundhog Day.
Yes, there we go. I was like, that was like trying to force that out of my brain. Yeah, Groundhog Day. I was actually watching. You watch At Midnight?
Well, what show?
At Midnight. It's the game show on Comedy Central hosted by Chris Hardwick.
No, I haven't. I haven't watched it yet.
He did kind of a tribute to him. Like, he comes back from commercial break, and he keeps repeating, it's 11:59, 59 seconds, because that's how he usually starts the show. But just as a tribute to Harold Ramis, every single time he came back from break, he would say, it's 11:59 in 59 seconds. This happened on whatever, his usual spiel tribute to Groundhog Day. And then he did this little Ghostbuster reference, like, there is no Martin, only Zool, you know, kind of thing. So I thought that was nice. It was kind of like subtle and, you know, and I thought that was a really good tribute to him. But, yeah, I mean, actually, the last thing I remember seeing Harold Ramis in, well, actually, I was about to say one film, Orange County, because he was in that film, actually, we were just talking about this beforehand, but he was in that film with Jack Black and Colin Hanks, and I remember his line in that, too. You know, he was definitely getting, you know, bigger and stuff like that at that point, but
he's
looking at Jack Black or Colin Hanks, and he's totally stoned because of whatever happened here, and he's looking at him like, we're the same height. That is neat.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he also was in, the last movie I remember seeing him in was Knocked Up.
Knocked Up, that's right, he was the dad.
Yeah.
That's right.
And that to me, that was like probably his best, more like recent role. That embodied how I think of Harold Ramis anyway, but.
Yeah. What I do remember him in one more film even after that, though, and that was it. It was that terrible, terrible idea of a film about, I forget what his name is. The kid from Superbad that was also on Arrested Development. George Michael.
Oh, Year One?
Yeah, Year One. He was in that, too, at the beginning. He was like, you know, like one of the big biblical characters, and it was all about, like, populating the earth or whatever. That was the last thing I saw him in. So.
Yeah, I mean, he was a great director, too. I mean, he did, you know, National Lampoon's Vacation, like was said before, you know, Groundhog Day, did Caddyshack. And he did Stewart Saves His Family, which is one of those classic, 2 o'clock in the morning joints on, Comedy Central.
you're smart enough.
Doggone it. People like you.
People like you. People like me, whatever you say.
I don't know why I was like really obsessed with that movie for a little bit. Like I kept catching myself watching it more than I should.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. Like, it was really not that good.
Yeah, but it's not as bad as Pat.
No. And did you know Tarantino wrote for the Pat movie?
Really?
Yeah, he's got an uncredited rewrite on that screenplay.
Wow. That's fantastic. People, what they did before they were famous.
For sure.
Yeah,
he only did it because he was friends with Julia Sweeney, though.
Oh, okay. Wow. I mean... But I was really struck by the news. It was really sad, and you know, I felt for him. I mean, I guess they had been talking for a long time too about Ghostbusters 3, which I'll be honest, I had mixed feelings about. I wasn't really sure I wanted to see it. You know.
Well, it's kind of one of those things. Like at first, it seems like a good idea on paper, but the more and more the production falls apart, and more Dan Aykroyd won't let it die.
Yeah.
The more I don't want to see it.
Well, Bill Murray doesn't want to be a part of it. He didn't want to be a part of it. You know, and because I remember reading something that Bill Murray said he would be a part of it, but he wanted to be in it as a ghost. Like, he wanted to be dead. And I always thought, well, why don't just do that? You know, I mean, it's funny. It makes sense. But I don't know. Dan Aykroyd in his recent years and stuff like that, he's just, I mean, I know he's like the conspiracy nut now. You know, the
UFO
guy.
Yeah.
Did you ever see that thing on Netflix? I know I'm already going off topic here, but it's like this movie. Well, I'm not talking about Netflix quite yet, but there was this movie that he did where some guy sits down to him and they start talking about UFO conspiracy theories. And he's just sitting there and he just looks terrible and he's smoking a cigarette. I mean, it looks like the most cliched type of UFO documentary I've ever seen in my entire life, you know?
Yeah, I saw the artwork for it on there. I just never could sit down and watch it because I live in Tennessee, so UFO conspiracies kind of go hand in hand where I live.
My favorite UFO abduction story, though, going back to Ghostbusters, is of course Ghostbusters 2. Peter Venkman is interviewing the lady who talks about the alien was in a hotel room in Paramus at a Holiday Inn. He disguised the spaceship to look like his truck. Or no, a room at the Holiday in Paramus.
I gotta watch that again. I haven't seen it in a while.
Any, So I just thought, you know, definitely a good time to talk about that. And we will miss you, Mr. Ramis. You're an awesome figure in our lives. Definitely formative. You made some of the best movies ever. And that will never be forgotten.
Well, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
One of my favorite directors and writers. So,
well,
pretty upsetting.
All right. I guess now we should probably get into some new trailers that we just saw.
For sure.
Yes. So, Godzilla.
Yeah.
I just watched the trailer before we started the podcast because, as I was telling Brock beforehand, I'd seen pieces of it here and there, and I heard the noise, like the sound of Godzilla. I was impressed.
Yeah.
But I don't know, even with this film, there's do you feel a little bit of apprehension about this film?
Not at all.
Okay. I mean, I'm excited for it, but there's still part of me, and it's not that they really do this a lot to films nowadays, maybe they do to some degree, but with films like this, you know, at least with legendary Warner Brothers, feels like, you know, they've learned a lot of the mistakes from the past and they're trying to move forward out of those things. That's why we've had good Batman movies, that's why we've had a variety of really great films. But anytime I think of Godzilla, the first thing that pops in my mind, of course, is Puff Daddy's Come With Me and Matthew Broderick running around New York, you know, trying to, I don't know, capture, you know, Godzilla or whatever he was doing in that film. It's been so long, I've totally forgotten.
It was awful, man. Like, I don't even consider it a Godzilla movie because it doesn't feel at all like a Godzilla movie. Mm-hmm. And you're right, yeah, the Puff Daddy, the fact that Led Zeppelin allowed that to happen, they should lose some royalties for a while, because that was the most awful hybrid of anything I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
And the video, can we agree that Hype Williams just needs to stop making videos? Because,
yes.
Like, how many videos can you make that are, like, look like everybody's under a black light, and there's, like, a kind of a fisheye-style lens,
right?
And people walking up to it. It's just like, please, Hype Williams, stop.
I think every Puff Daddy video and stuff like that, especially, just, like, I remember that. A lot of the black lights, I remember that one he did with Biggie with the puffy suits. Do you remember that one?
Yes.
Yeah, they were, like, in this, and they're, like, in some sort of dome or something, like, they're floating around or whatever.
Yes.
Oh, God. But, yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, go for it. After you.
Oh, well, what I was gonna say is the reason I have confidence in this is because the guy that's directing it is a guy named Gareth Edwards, and he did a movie called Monsters. Mm. And Monsters was really visually stunning and had a lot of cool substance to it. And so I think that this is going to be, I guess, you know, if you wanted to take Godzilla and, like, make the Joel Schumacher Batman comparison, this will be the Christopher Nolan version of Godzilla.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, like I said, I just get a little apprehensive always. But just by seeing this trailer, I'm really impressed. There was one scene that I already mentioned to you that I was a little bit like, what the hell is that? You know, when the people in the radioactive suits, they start brushing over, there's this white, thick, viscous substance that they are past the radioactive signal. So my initial,
because Godzilla got skate, right. skate.
I'm like, that's in the trailer? I'm all on board for a Godzilla film where Godzilla finally finds some love. Maybe that's all this is about.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess they're going to make a sequel called The Son of Godzilla, because Godzilla's, you know, just throwing the baby batter around everywhere.
I
so.
Know. Maybe they'll bring in Kazuki. Was that his name in the cartoon? The little, his little partner character or whatever?
I think so. Kazuki. Are you talking about the 80s? The 80s Godzilla? Okay. Good reference.
Yeah. I actually heard that recently and it just popped in my brain. But yeah. I don't know. So it looks great. It looks like it's going to be an amazing movie.
Yeah, I mean, you got Bryan Cranston right off of Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Playing the Raymond Burr style character. And if anybody's going to put birth control in Godzilla, it's going to be Bryan fucking Cranston. You know what I'm saying? He's going to be out there like, get out my way, Godzilla.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I was actually kind of joking with somebody. I'm like, actually, didn't you know Godzilla, of course, is kind of a spinoff from Breaking Bad? Like, all the blue meth that they made, they dumped it into the ocean at one point, and then this giant-ass creature comes along, so.
And just starts raping the city.
Mm-hmm. Is this one taking place in San Francisco? It looks like it. Or, I don't know, maybe a different city?
I don't know. I'm really, like, I don't know. I kind of want to be surprised, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, in the poster, I was looking at the tower, and it was making me think of, there's, like, this triangular-shaped building in San Francisco that's kind of, like, comes to a peak. And that was the building that I saw, so maybe.
No, it's the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Ohio, man. Come on.
Of course.
Everybody wants to set Godzilla in Ohio. I mean, it's so hot.
I mean, I think it's a nice change of pace. That's one thing I didn't actually get about the previous film. You know, okay, so Japan is out in the Pacific, and somehow Godzilla, he skips all the other continents that he could have made landfall on and instead decides to go to New York. Or was he? No, he wasn't transported there, was he? No, I don't even.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right.
Okay, yeah. So that just didn't make any sense. Like, oh, we're just going to do this in New York for some reason, you know.
Yeah. I don't know what they're going to do. I'm kind of trying. I'm trying a little bit to keep a little mystery. Mm-hmm. Because I don't want to go in with the expectation of, like, what happened the last time, which was awful.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of. Sometimes I do that with certain things that I watch. Like, I'll just. Won't pay attention to much about it. Like, I won't read any articles about it because I'm just like, I don't want to know too much. I'll just go in and have fun.
I think that's a safe bet.
So.
All right. Well, that's Godzilla. And, of course, the other trailer that came out just last week, in fact, was Guardians of the Galaxy.
Which I'm super stoked about. It's probably my most... I'm probably awaiting this one the most.
Yeah.
Out of this year. One of them, anyway. But
I'm excited for the new Spider-Man. Those are all great, you know, but I've seen those variations before. I've never seen Guardians of the Galaxy on film, and the trailer from James Gunn is directing, correct?
That's correct, okay. Which is a crazy, crazy directorial choice.
I know, but I love this. It.
I do, too.
Genius. And then, of course, Chris Pratt as Star-Lord. I lost it when I saw that ad because it was just... It was amazing. I just thought that if this is the take that they're going with it, I'm super happy. I mean, I was a little bit bitter, honestly, at the film for a little while because I'm a big Karen Gillan fan. I got a huge crush on her, and that was the film that made her shave her head.
Yeah.
But I just seeing this trailer, I was just like, okay, all right, you're forgiven. I know. Hair grows back, but films like this don't get made every day.
No, it's going to be something, man. I think it's going to be a lot bigger than everybody's expecting.
I do, too. I mean, I'm just, I don't know, there were a lot of different elements to this. And, of course, Rocket Raccoon, you know, being voiced by, what's his name? Actually, do you know?
Bradley Cooper.
Bradley Cooper. And then Vin Diesel's doing the voice of, I don't remember the other character.
Root.
Yes, Root. And I'm excited. And, of course, I thought Zoe Saldana was appropriately cast as well in there. I need to refamiliarize myself with a comic book because it has been, I probably read that back, like, I don't know, when did that finally go out of press?
Well, there was the first series of Guardians of the Galaxy, which was kind of like a futuristic Avengers.
Right.
And then this one, I think, started in 2003?
Yeah, I think that's about right. I may have read a couple of the original, but I didn't really remember anything from that. I think I was remembering the more recent press version of that. But yeah, I'm super excited. I think this is a wise choice. You know, because especially since Marvel has been the one to kind of take on the more risky properties of the Marvel Universe. And now look, I mean, their household names, Iron Man, Captain America, Thor. These are characters that, you know, were always iconic to me, but didn't mean almost nothing to a lot of people. And now they're mainstream. Now they're as mainstream as Batman, Superman, a lot of the very notable DC characters. And I think they're going to do the same with Guardians. And it just looks really just crazy amazing. But, of course, there was a few scenes from the trailer that it was all Chris Pratt scenes, too, like with the walkie the walkie. What is it? The Walkman. I was about to say walkie-talkie. The Walkman and everything like that. Him flipping out over that. And, of course, you know, then behind the glass that's analyzing them, and he's doing the old, you know, oh, look at this. What's this? You know?
Oh, and it came out in 2008. Okay. Is when this version came out. Yeah, I'm really stunned that they're making it. Like, it just seems like such a thing. It's so crazy to me that, like, you know, when in the 90s, I don't know if you ever read Wizard magazine, but that was like a huge thing for us to read. And they used to do like the casting call thing in Wizard magazine, where they'd like, oh, this person should play Captain America or Professor X, you know.
Right.
And, like, we always talked about movies, and every time we get, like, who would you cast in the Avengers, we'd always laugh. The Avengers would never be made.
Yeah.
It would never go that far. You know what I mean?
Far-out choice, like, oh, yeah, this is, like, a total, like, you know, fanboy's wet dream right here, but this is not going to ever happen.
But now we're making Guardians of the freaking Galaxy.
See, this is why I'm excited about being in this time. I mean, I know a lot of people are bitter. And maybe, I mean, definitely rightfully so in a lot of ways. Like, we get a lot of sequels made, a lot of remakes. I don't have so much of a problem with sequels. I have more of a problem with remakes more than anything. But I'm
on the fence.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, even then, what do I have to really be, you know, like, in a big complaint about? Because, for that matter, I should be upset that Batman was remade. You know, but for that matter, it's been remade, like, 4 or 5 times now. There's always been a different iteration. So sometimes these properties bring something new to the table, other times they don't. But regardless, this is where we're at now. Like, studios are finally recognizing that it's a very simple formula. You take something that people love, and you just put it on screen. And you also get people who are equally as passionate about it to make and produce and direct and to star in these films. And that's what's really cool here. That's what really gets me excited.
I just wish that Kevin Feige would, you know, he's the head of the Marvel Studios project, but I wish he would find a way to get the other properties back.
Yeah, I was actually a little excited for a while, because you know about X-Men Days of Future Past,
mm-hmm.
that they're also going to have Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver in that as well.
Yeah.
So they're doing that in Avengers, and at one point, I think it was Marvel, they announced who was going to be it in Avengers, or maybe it's the other way around. No, they announced who they were going to have over in the Avengers film as Scarlet Witch. They didn't announce their Quicksilver. And then you go over to X-Men Days of Future Past. They announced who their Quicksilver was going to be, but still no mention of Scarlet Witch. My hope was that what they were doing was actually preparing for like a crossover event, like a partnership between Disney, Marvel Studios, and, you know, with Fox Pictures. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like that's the way they're going, but who knows? Fingers still crossed to the future. I mean, I've been watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and they've got on this big kick of talking about, like, no, there's no mutants. Mutants don't exist here.
Yeah.
So I think that has to do with copyright property, though.
Well, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. I mean, X-Men, if anything, should be the one that comes back to you, Marvel. And a lot of people will probably be mad at me for saying this, I kind of hope Days of Future Past fails.
You know what? I mean, if it did, they would stop making it. The rights would go back to, Disney, and I would be really happy about that because they've been killing it over there. I mean, look, I really loved, X-Men First Class, and I thought that was actually one of the first films, like, out of
me
all
too.
The X-Men films that I'm like, this one's actually really good, and it was also a film that didn't feel like it was just based around Wolverine, because Wolverine only has, like, a cameo in the damn thing. So I'm like, that was the right way to do it. But my only problem with it is, like, okay, so I think there's a few characters they've definitely screwed over, like Cyclops being one of them, one of my favorite characters.
Mm-hmm, me too.
I mean, they totally make him a pussy, you know? They're just, like, constantly pushing him around, and ultimately they kill him off by the third one. That's just because James Marsden went off to go work on that atrocity of Superman Returns.
Right.
You know, so it's like, makes no sense, doesn't, you know. And then Bryan Singer got it. Well, actually, I don't remember Singer's films being bad. I mean, of course, that was Brett Ratner when 3 came around. But, you know, it was just, the whole thing just became a little too, like, distant from the actual source material, which I don't generally have a problem with. I mean, if they want to explore a different type of storyline with those characters, it, I mean, it's their iteration. They're free to do so, but you just have to keep the essence of those characters. And I didn't feel like a lot of times when you see these characters on screen that you really got that, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, and the reason The First Class was so good is because it was done by Matthew Vaughn, and Matthew Vaughn is just an awesome director. I guess, like, my biggest problem, and I like X-Men 2. That was a really good one, but I don't really like Hugh Jackman as Wolverine.
I like Wolverine. Actually, you know what? I had no problem with him as Wolverine. It was always just the stories that they gave him. You know,
I could see that. Yeah. That, and that may be my complaint. It's just, it just seems really watered down to me.
Did you see the most recent Wolverine film?
I did, and I liked it.
Yeah, I did. I was actually the first one that I was like, this is really good. This is like Hugh Jackman actually getting a little bit more say what he wants to do with the role, even.
Yeah, and I liked it. I liked it, and I'm not putting Jackman down because I like Jackman as an actor. It just seems like that Bryan Singer's version of the X-Men just seems really watered down to me. Like, yeah. It doesn't. That's what I loved about First Class. I had that Chris Claremont vibe about it. Mm-hmm. And that's not what Singer is doing. I don't even know what kind of X-Men Singer is doing when I see a Singer X-Men movie.
Well, you know, even in this recent one, so, like, I guess Rogue did have a small part in this film. Well, they cut her out completely now, so she's not in the film.
Right.
And I guess, like, you get a few of the former cast members, but it doesn't look like they're going to be in the film, like, in a really serious way. And here's, again, my problem. So the more and more I read about this story, because I've opened up Empire Magazine, I've delved into it, trying to find out, like, what is their plan. And every single time, like, I look into it, it seems like this is about Wolverine going into the past, trying to recruit the X-Men from the past to, the, you know, merge them together with the ones in the future or do something like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why does this always have to be about Wolverine? Like, there are other, I mean, you're thinking about the entire mutant universe. There are thousands of characters that they've developed. You have new X-Men. You have Uncanny X-Men. Even just in the books, I mean, they have explored all these different characters. I mean, there's characters that I feel like the only one that I saw on screen that I actually appreciated the fact that they finally did something with her was actually in one of the weakest of the X-Men films. And that was X-Men 3, whatever they called it, you know. I forgot.
X-Men United.
No, that was 2. X-Men
2. Oh, it was.
X-Men United. And then
The Last Stand.
Thank you. Ellen Page as Kitty Pryde.
Yeah.
I thought that was perfect casting. And that is, again, one of my absolute favorite characters in the Marvel Universe is Kitty Pryde. Don't ask me why. I just really enjoyed her stories. I enjoyed her character. And anyway, like, I finally felt like, okay, so that was the only accurate representation that I feel like so far that they've done a really good job on. And there was a very small story to that film about her. But it was something, you know, and I was like, oh my God, this isn't all about Wolverine, even though the rest of the film was absolutely about Wolverine and Jean Grey and all that. But, you know, so they brought her back for this one, and apparently she's like the leader of this kind of resistance group in the future after, you know, because we kind of know, I mean, you've definitely read a lot of these books and stuff like that, so have I, you know, with Age of Apocalypse and all of that. But, you know, I don't know. It still seemed like, okay, we're just bringing these people in for a little FaceTime on camera, but really, this is just another Wolverine film.
Well, I'm really hoping to be mistaken. You know, as much as I would like to see the rights turn back to Marvel, I'd like to see this done well if we're going to have to do this for a while.
Yeah.
And I know they're doing the Age of Apocalypse next. Like, they start shooting that pretty, like, probably early next year.
Well, I think the good thing is that if this film does well, Fox retains rights. At some point, though, they're going to be thinking, how much money would we make if we merged our two properties together? Made a partnership between Disney, Marvel, and Fox, which there's not a lot of things that would cause two studios to do that, but Avengers made $1 billion opening week, you know?
Yeah.
And this next X-Men film with all of these different characters there, I would say, I don't know if it's going to do that money, but it's going to do good. I think it's going to do astronomically well, probably better than any of the previous films. But you take all of that and you put it into one super film, I mean, you could be seeing the first film to, like, break $2 or $3 billion opening week. I don't know if that's possible. Maybe that's totally a pipe dream, but, you know, you're going to get a lot of people excited, you know, just having those all together. I'm not going to say it's going to be a great film, because, you know, you know, just way too many faces in front of the camera. However, it'll be kind of like an awesome moment still.
Well, is it, Fox is terrible, is a terrible movie studio.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say it. Yeah. Like, they've had a bad track record. For every movie they do, they have watered down or it's been crap.
Yeah.
And to me, they would have done this a long time ago if they were going to do it.
Yeah.
Because they took a lot of hits. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of the movies that were supposed to do spectacular for them didn't do as well.
Yeah.
And I thought there was going to be a turning point when a lot of that was going on. And it didn't. And that's what kind of makes me nervous about this. Because I'm like, well, they didn't learn anything from anything else.
Yeah.
So maybe they're not going to learn anything here either.
It's very true.
And so I'm hoping for the best. Because, you know, despite me not loving this version of the X-Men, I still like Bryan Singer as a director. I did like Usual Suspects. I like At People. And I did like the first two X-Men movies. I mean, they're not my favorite, but I'll take them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Singer's just in a weird space now. He did Superman Returns, that bombed. And recently he did that other film,
Jack the Giant Slayer or whatever. Oh, man.
Yeah. I'm like, the original was no good. We don't need a remake of that.
Right.
There's nothing to build from there. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see what Sony ends up doing with Spider-Man. I think at some point there may be some crossover that can happen there. We'll see.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about them saying recently that there needs to be a Spider-Man movie every year.
Yeah, I don't need to see a Spider-Man movie every year.
They said that recently. I was like, because they're talking about doing a Sinister Six movie, and
yeah.
I'm like, how does that even work?
Without Spider-Man in it, I'm not entirely certain that would really work. I mean, you get a lot of fanboys involved. That, to me, would be like one of those limited series that you may be able to see that we're going to talk about here in a moment, like on a Netflix thing, you know? But
yeah.
I don't see that happening like in a theater and people really being involved unless it's a film maybe centric around, I don't know, Venom. But they would have to kind of build up Venom back on the screen. So
yeah, it's all crazy. I mean, if they're going to do Sinister Six, they should get Mark Millar to kind of oversee that because he wrote a series, comic series called Nemesis.
Yeah.
Have you read that?
Yes, actually I have.
And you get where I'm going with this.
Right.
Like Nemesis is like if Batman had a lot of money and was the Joker, or Bruce Wayne was the Joker instead of Batman.
Yeah.
And if they're going to take that route, they really should in some way evoke some Mark Millar in that. It would really work well, I think.
Well, from what I've heard, that's actually what they've been trying to do lately. Like, I actually read something about Mark Millar actually being involved in that process with Spider-Man. So we'll see. I mean, there's always hope, you know, that maybe he is going to have some bigger involvement. But, you know, overall, I've actually really enjoyed those films. I like...
I have, too.
Yeah.
I agree.
Well, I mean, films, there's only been the one, really, with this new Spider-Man and kind of the reboot. But I really liked
it. I liked it a lot better than the Sam Raimi, and I'm a huge Sam Raimi fan.
Exactly.
Like, I think it embodies Spider-Man a lot more. It's it knows how to balance the serious and the comedy.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like that's where Sam Raimi's series failed.
Well, you know what? I thought that was one of the big problems with, like, Peter Parker and Tobey Maguire, you know, in that character, was that he's always this kind of emo character and not so clever, not so quick. But when I thought of Spider-Man, I thought of someone who actually, yeah, is a nerd, but they put on the mask and they get some sort of confidence, you know?
Yeah.
And they're able to go out there, you know, throw out some quick, you know, quick-witted quotes and stuff like that. You know, they're just funny. But that didn't really happen with that character. It was always like, oh boy, Mary Jane, I'm so nervous around her. Which, okay, yeah, that is part of Spider-Man, you know, Peter Parker's, you know, history. But there was never really any development in that area. Even when he started getting with her, it felt that way, you know?
I think what bothered me about it is, have you seen the movie Pleasantville?
Yes.
I love Pleasantville. I love the, I've seen it so many times, but it was like watching... Instead of Peter Parker, it was like watching Tobey Maguire's character from that movie turn into Spider-Man.
Yep, pretty much.
And that's why it never worked for me.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he was a good actor, but in the second film, there was a point when Jake Gyllenhaal almost took over the role because Maguire got injured on Seabiscuit.
Yeah.
And I guess there was some problems with Raimi and Maguire even at that point. Like,
and I don't think Gyllenhaal would have been any better.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah, Gyllenhaal was just like, I don't know.
Or Gyllenhaal, sorry.
Worse. But I'm not gonna take offense. That's his name. But anyway. but yeah, I mean, maybe he would have been a little bit though. I mean, he seems like he had at least some ability. Like he may have gotten in there and been like, okay, can we give this guy like a few quick-witted lines or something to say, because you know this is just dry, you know. But who knows? I mean, it's really hard to say. I think it had less maybe to do with the actor at that point, and maybe more to do with like either the story writer or the director. But I know by the third one, it was just there was no going back after that point. You know, just sitting there in the audience watching Tobey Maguire in total emo mode because he gets, you know, the symbiote joins with him, and he's going out there like jazz dancing. That was done for me. You know, like, yeah.
Well, and it was sad. It's sad that it happened that way because the studio is the reason Spider-Man 3 sucks so bad.
Yeah.
And I don't put that on Raimi at all. I kind of wish Raimi had fought a little bit more and said, you know, I'm going to do this my way. I don't care what you want.
So
I have power and clout here.
So
does that mean anything?
Well, so basically that's the backstory of that, because I actually didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of why Venom showed up. And Topher Grace was like the worst choice for Venom anyway.
Yeah.
And it kind of saddened me because Sandman, which would have been a lame character if we had discussed it prior to that, was actually really, really good in that movie.
I agree.
It really, really worked on a level I didn't think it could work.
Thomas Hayden Church actually connected with the audience, I think, in a really emotional way.
Yeah.
And the problem was, by the end of the film, like, I remember there being a point, like, what happened? Because he just goes, I hate Spider-Man. And then Venom shows up, and he's like, let's team up together and try to take him down. I'm like, is this like a 60s episode of Batman I'm watching now?
Right, right.
It just made no sense. And I felt like, and then they turn it, of course, into like, you know, they try to get back to that point of making him really human at the very end. But still, they screwed it up there. And that was really sad and very depressing. And yeah, you're right with, what's his name? Topher Grace. I mean, actually, he would have probably been a good Spider-Man even. But not a Venom.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I imagine, like, Michael Biehn playing Venom. I always thought that would have been, like, the coolest choice they could have made because Michael Biehn, you know, he was John Connor's father in Terminator, you know. And, it would have been kind of like a nice nudge to the James Cameron take on Spider-Man that they were going to do that was talked about for so long. And I think that Venom has to be an older character. I don't think he needs to be the same age as Peter Parker. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with that. But wow, we got all the way over here on Spider-Man from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes.
You are noticing the trend in this episode, kids, that this is going to be a regular part of the show.
Yeah.
But so anyway, with all of that said and done, now of going through all these different iterations of the characters that they've filmed, it is nice to know that Guardians is coming to the big screen, and that we'll be seeing it. I think it's August, right?
Yeah.
August.
Yeah.
Actually,
think so.
Let's recount what's happening this year. So I know in May we have Spider-Man, but before that in April we get Captain America 2, which I'm incredibly excited about. I don't know about you.
I love the first one. I think it's actually probably one of my favorite of the Avengers spinoffs.
You know what I'm most excited about this film for? Is the inclusion of Robert Redford.
Yeah.
I
always like some Robert Redford.
I think, like, I read something about this film that they're trying to make it more of like a 70s type conspiracy thriller in a lot of ways that has to do with government. And you can kind of see that even in the trailer, Captain America having problems with S.H.I.E.L.D. but working for them, nonetheless, because he feels like it's his patriotic duty, but he's still refamiliarizing himself with a new world, you know? And he's starting to learn that things are not as simple as at least he thought they were from his time. So dealing with those changes and how powers have shifted, I'm excited to see that. And, of course, just the whole Bucky Barnes situation with Winter Soldier and the Falcon. I'm glad that... Actually, I think they just announced that Scarlet Witch is finally going to get her own film. So I was happy about
that. Yeah. I don't know how I feel about that one.
I mean, I would like to see them, like, pull on, like, another female character for their own film. But I'm glad to see that. I mean, for me, I think that's a little bit of progress. However, I always kind of get freaked out, too, by those propositions because, you know, unfortunately, female characters traditionally haven't done very well in cinemas, and they've blamed it because audiences don't want to go see a female superhero. I disagree with that wholeheartedly.
I do, too.
I mean, it's just they haven't made one that people really want to go see. It has more to do with the production itself than it has to do with people's desire to see something like that. Like, what have they given us? Catwoman with Halle Berry. You know, they've given us Tomb Raider with Angelina Jolie. You know, films that just were like, you know, not terrible, some of them. Like, I thought the Tomb Raider films are okay. But still, that's not a big draw for me, you know? Like,
yeah,
the one character they always avoid is Wonder Woman. Now, it finally looks like that's not the plan anymore. Like, with this new Superman-Batman film that's coming out, looks more like a Justice League film. And they got Gal Gadot playing Wonder Woman. And I've actually been seeing her, like, she's been posting her workout status recently. And I actually have, like, I wanted to see what kind of actor she was. So I started going back into her catalog, finding, like, films that she's in. She's an amazing actress. So not only is she going to, you know, try to embody the character, but she actually does have the chops to actually pull it off. And I'm excited about that. So hopefully with this new wave, like, I would think, like, the smart thing at least about the Black Widow is she's been in, like, 4 different Marvel films at this point. So at least people are familiar with her, you know.
Yeah, I actually think, it's not that I don't have a problem with the Scarlett Johansson, you know, doing the Black Widow movie. It's I just don't find the character that interesting.
Yeah.
And that's the reason I feel that way. I think we'll see people eat their words is on Wonder Woman.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I think that'll be successful. I think it'll do better than they're expecting. I think it'll be the point where we, and I may be wrong, that we'll eat our words on DC.
Yeah.
Because if they can turn that one around, because, you know, they've only had Batman and Superman at this point, really. I mean, the Green Lantern, that was pretty awful.
Right.
But I think that if they can make Wonder Woman work and have the first movie that makes over $100 million mm-hmm. with a woman lead, anything can happen.
I agree.
For DC at that point.
I agree. And I'm also glad, too, I guess, that they're going to go with the Jon Stewart Green Lantern, which I was thrilled about, because to me, that really is Green Lantern. I know Hal Jordan, Kyle Rayner, all these different people who've played that part in the comics, but to me, always Jon Stewart. And people, when I say that, if you don't know anything about the character, I'm not talking about, The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. I'm talking about he's an African-American character back in the days like the 70s and 80s and stuff like that started coming around. He ended up taking over as Green Lantern for a long time. But to me, he is my favorite. That is the best idea. And I'm excited if that's the approach they're going to take with that Justice League series. So they got the cast. I mean, I'm still on board with Ben Affleck. Until he does something to actually prove that this is going to be awful, then I'm just going to be optimistic. But anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Should we move on to television series now?
Yeah, or we could just call it Netflix.
Yes. You know what?
Because we're probably going to be talking about Netflix for a little
while. We were going to talk about Goldbergs, but I think that since we're running kind of out of time here, let's just go straight into House of Cards. Maybe we should preface by saying spoiler alert, everyone. Like,
oh, yeah. Spoiler deep spoilers.
Spoiler alert. We are not going to hold back anything. At this point, we have pretty much done our podcast. This is just a little like, hey, me and Brock want to talk here about freaking House of Cards. So if you don't want to listen anymore, thanks for joining us. Have a great day. But if you want to stay tuned, you've watched House of Cards, or you haven't, and you're feeling a little bit curious, then go ahead and sit back and enjoy what we're about to say. So, Brock, I'll give the microphone over to you.
So I became a TV heroin addict. I started watching House of Cards Season 1. And did not stop watching House of Cards until the end of Season 2. So I had probably a completely different experience than you did.
Yes.
Because you probably watched Season 1 when it first hit Netflix,
pretty
am I correct?
Much, yeah. And then all right. I watched Season 2 when it just came out this last week.
So I'm going to start by saying season one's going to be my favorite.
Okay.
Just because it's more off the cuff. You don't know exactly who Frank Underwood is yet. You know he's manipulative, but you don't know he's crazy enough, spoiler alert, to push the reporter in front of a train.
Yes, you're, in fact, going back even to what we were saying about all the Marvel properties, your Invisible Woman gets pushed in front of a train.
Right.
At the beginning of season two.
Season one is going to be my favorite. And I like season two. My only problem is I don't think they made us work for it enough. And that was what upset me about season two.
What do you mean?
Because we, okay, so season one, we finished with Frank Underwood is the House Majority Whip. Mm-hmm. And he manipulates his way into vice president.
Right.
And it worked. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because you're kind of seeing the trail end of that story. Mm-hmm. Season two, vice president at the end. Kind of expected after season one.
Yeah.
You know, going into the presidency. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I kind of wish that one, because it almost seemed too fast for me. Like, right. I think they could have broke that up into two seasons.
You're probably right on that. Yeah. Yeah.
Not to say I didn't enjoy it. I really liked the season, but that was my complaint. Like, okay, we already ended on this note the last season. Mm-hmm. I would have liked to see something a little different in the second season. And then the presidency in the third.
Well, I think the reason they decided to go ahead and go that direction in this season is because now aren't you really curious to see what the hell they're going to end up doing in season three?
Kinda.
I mean,
kinda.
It's not like there's any other place to go up from there unless he's going to declare himself emperor of the world.
You're absolutely correct. And I am... Yeah, and I'm going to make my prediction on the show right now. I think season three ends with the next election.
Yeah, probably.
And it's going to turn into, did you ever see the movie Primary Colors?
Yeah.
Or did you ever read the book Primary Colors?
Yeah.
I think it's going to turn into Frank Underwood in that situation.
That sounds about right. I mean, I always go back to the name of the show, though. House of Cards, you know.
It's all going to come tumbling down at some point,
pretty
right?
Pretty much. So I'm wondering if season three is that, you know. I mean, I don't know how long they're planning on carrying the series forward.
Yeah, I'm wondering that too.
And I know this is all based off of an original UK series called House of Cards, which I've never seen. I don't know. Have you ever seen that?
I checked out some episodes.
How was it? Was different tone? Different?
Different, completely different tone, because it's based on Parliament.
Right, of course.
So that's a little bit of a different democracy than what we're used to.
Pretty much.
But, I mean, a lot of similar things, like the reporter or the character that the reporter is based off of in the original series gets pushed off the roof of Parliament. So there are some similarities, just done in different ways.
Interesting. Well, I definitely like the train stunt a little bit more, I think.
That was pretty abrupt.
Yeah. And actually, in the first episode in season two, he doesn't really say anything to the audience like he did in the previous season until right there at the end when he looks at the camera, he's like, "You're probably hoping that I forgot about you," or whatever. And I'm like,
love
that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I call those the Zach Morris moments, you know.
Ferris Bueller.
Yeah, Ferris Bueller moments, even. Yeah, just addressing the camera.
I mean, I love the show. It kind of makes me question my own idea of what's entertaining to me, because mm-hmm. I went from Breaking Bad to this.
Yeah, and they're terrible people.
Horrible people. Right. And I'm like, why am I rooting for this?
I know. The guy like pushes this young, innocent reporter girl who's just trying to, you know, make sure that she's not a part of anything like really horrible, you know, like a part of a murder. And then he just pushes her in front of a train. And somehow, by the end of that episode, you're still on the side of freaking Frank Underwood. So it does make you feel like, am I an awful person?
Oh, we're totally terrible people for rooting for this shit, man. It's like, I mean, let's just going back to Breaking Bad for a second. I mean, the fact that we were rooting for him, that was probably enough. And now we're rooting for Frank Underwood. So we got some double jeopardy stuff going on here.
Oh, man. Yeah, but I mean, so I really did enjoy it, you know, regardless of some of those points that you made. Because, I would agree with that. Like, it would be better, actually, if they had kind of pulled that out. Because you don't want to make that totally predictable. And I did kind of sense that, okay, he became the vice president after season one. What the hell's going to happen here? And you're thinking, this is a man who climbs the ladder. The presidency is on his mind. So season three, of course, I think that's the one that I'm really excited about now, because that one, I'm just looking forward to seeing what the hell happens. I'm like, maybe he blows up the freaking world. No, you don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
He just murders all of Russia. He's like, we're not really into all this other stuff over there. Let's just drop a bomb on them or something like that. I have no idea. I have no idea what to expect. Maybe he will literally do a Fonzie and go water skiing and jump a shark. I mean, you never know.
Yeah, and that's my biggest worry, is what can they do in season three? They really have to pull this off, because it's one thing to get away with it for two seasons, but like, there's even some questionable moments in those two seasons where you're like, oh, this is kind of a stretch.
Yeah.
So
there's some things that are like big gambles even for Frank Underwood's character.
And the fact that nobody's picked up on his manipulation.
Yeah.
It's kind of strange in some places on that show. So
yeah, but I mean, I get it. You know, it's really hard to craft a story like that for sure.
It is.
I mean, I guess in certain situations, though, ultimately, it's not that I don't believe it. It's just like, this would be like the best possible scenarios for Frank Underwood. But, you know, it usually does work out for him. So
I really, really did like Corey Stoll as Representative Russo, though. I kind of missed his character a little bit in the second season. I thought he brought a nice balance to the show. So I was really kind of upset that, you know, with his character killing himself or getting killed by Frank Underwood at the end of the first season. That was kind of a bummer, because it was kind of cool, the balancing the act between the two actors, because Spacey's playing a really strong manipulative character and Russo is like a really weak character that looks up to people. So it was a really cool dynamic, because he was looking up kind of to Frank, and Frank was manipulating them the whole time. So it was kind of, that was a really cool balance in the show that was kind of missing in the second season.
Well, I think they were trying to do that with, I don't remember her name, but she was the new representative who came in, the new character. I don't remember. I know she actually...
Sharp.
Yes. I think you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah,
but I think they were trying to do that with her, and I didn't feel like they totally succeeded with that particular character, you know. But we'll see. I mean, you know, we still got another season to see what ends up happening. Maybe they were just laying down a foundation work for her for season three. I think she'll probably be pretty instrumental in the following season.
I kept calling her Cuz when I was watching, because we shared the same last name, so it was like every time she'd do something rowdy, I'd be like, "Get him, Cuz!" Yeah. You know, like. Having fun with that. I'd say the biggest surprise of second season for me was Jimmy Simpson as the hacker guy.
Oh, right. I know.
Because I love Jimmy Simpson.
I love him on It's Always Sunny.
Yeah, it's always sunny.
On there with the weird inbred cousins or brothers or whatever.
And that eye, that look he always gives on that show, that weird, like, cracks me up on a dime every time. But I love Jimmy Simpson. I hope Jimmy Simpson's back for the third season.
I hope so, too. I thought it was interesting, though, that he infiltrated specifically the AT&T network. Because I was a little bit surprised by that. Like, wait, they can say that? They can actually use a real network?
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing with this character is just so awesome. He had a guinea pig that he loved like a dog. And then, you know, he played all this weird techno music and... Yeah. Ended up actually being the strong hand at the end, you know, and it was just kind of, you know, I kind of want to see, I can't think of his name, but the boyfriend of Zoe's boyfriend at the end, I want to see that play out again in season three.
Yeah, I am looking forward to, I can't remember his name, but Frank's basically his second hand, you know, the guy who would go out and take care of all his
situations. Yeah.
Like, that was one thing that I thought, like...
Doug Stamper,
yes,
that's his
Doug
name.
Doug Stamper, and then I don't remember her name, Rachel, I think.
Rachel.
Yeah, the woman who...
Yeah.
Stories on. Like, I remember... Actually, I probably should go back and just catch up a little bit on season one again, because I think there were a few details I had forgotten about, actually, because it's been a year. Yeah, I was, like, trying to think, like, oh, well, who was she? And I'm like, oh, that's right, she was the prostitute, and... Then, you know, they were trying to get rid of her or whatever and stuff like that. But, yeah, I'm actually, like, kind of interested to see what happens with that storyline. Because at the end of the season, you know, he ends up dead. She ends up getting away, so.
I want to see Remy fall, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's something else I'm looking forward to.
Oh, wow. I mean,
Remy's cockiness is going to get him really bad on next season, I have a feeling.
Yeah, I keep calling that one individual, too. Who's any other time of day, I could probably remember his name, but I'll just call him Major Dad.
Oh, yeah, Raymond Tusk.
Yes, Raymond Tusk. I mean, it's weird. I just watched this, and I've already forgotten these characters' names. But, yeah, Raymond Tusk, Major Dad. I can't wait to see what ends up happening there either. Because I think he'll be back. I don't think his character is totally done yet. But maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, no, I wanted to see him fall pretty bad, too. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. Frank Underwood's the one that should be falling, mm-hmm. and we're rooting for everybody else to fall around Frank.
Oh,
it's pretty funny.
Going back to feeling like horrible, despicable people. But anyway, so I would say both of us are definitely recommending, if you haven't seen it and you listened to all of this, well, you know, that's your fault. We gave you fair warning. But you should definitely go back and check it out. Maybe if you really enjoyed it, let us know on our Facebook page what you thought about the series. Just make sure if you have any spoilers to put spoiler alert on one of it. Whatever. Above it. But so you also wanted to talk a little bit about Netflix itself. So let's do that before we wrap up here.
Okay, so I'm not really feeling this whole season, all these seasons at once thing. Mm-hmm. I'm really not. Like, I am a total embracer of technology. You know this. Yeah. Like, I'm a nerd. But I am not down with this, man, because it really fucks up the water cooler talk.
Yeah, I've heard that argument too before. And I don't know. I mean, my recommendation is to people, I mean, it's tempting, but then just hold off. You know, like maybe even going to like one episode a week or one episode a day.
See, there's no parenting on it, though. Like, you can't walk up. Like, I can't go, like, if I hadn't watched that and I would just want to call you up and be like, dude, let's talk about season one. And you haven't, and you've already watched the entire season.
Yeah.
Like, it's a weird conversation. You know what I mean?
You know,
it's not like.
Happen. And in fact, if you go through the entire season, then you end up disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, it's really not something I'm digging, man. I get, like, let's get it on TV. Let's not hold back. Let's release them. But, like, at the same time, I'm actually okay with getting an episode every week. It gives me something to sit on, something to look forward to, and I really enjoy that aspect of TV.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the good thing is that Netflix is a little bit different. I mean, I know a lot of people think that television is going to go in that direction completely as well, but I don't think so. Not now, anyway. And you'll still have
to it's a grand experiment, don't get me wrong. And I understand why they're doing it, and I think it's a great thing to try. I just don't think it works for serialized TV.
True.
If it was like Arrested Development, I got why that was released all at once. Yeah. I don't know if it was a good idea, but I get it, you know. But for stuff like House of Cards, that's water cooler show, you know, like.
True.
That's the show we like getting together and be like, hey man, what's gonna happen next week? You think Frank's gonna, you know, run off with the entire Muppet gang and go to France?
Right.
I mean, I like to make those speculations, as ridiculous as that speculation is. That's what kept me addicted to Lost, even though it bottomed out at the end.
Mm-hmm.
It's because there's so much fun in the speculation.
I was just about to say that, too. That was the one thing I had a lot of fun with Lost about, was actually having those conversations, the theories, the conspiracy theories, you know, what's really happening on the island. And, yeah, of course, it did kind of, you know, lose its bottom at the end, but... You know, it was fun to at least have those moments, because that's what made that show so great, was the interaction with people and the theorizing. So,
Netflix, please stop.
Or, you know, I mean, yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, you know, I do kind of like enjoy binge viewing something as well.
Me too.
But, yeah, you do have less of those conversations. I mean, I just think this. There's a lot of shows still on television that I watch. You got a lot of HBO series that still come on weekly. I think we're okay on that front. Just Netflix is, they've decided to take this approach, this model. Some people mm-hmm. love it. Some people hate it. I think you have pretty much two really opposing views. You don't have many people on the center on this one. So, yeah, I mean, I'm okay with it, but I totally understand your side of it. You know, just like that need to really just have discussions and, you don't really do that. You sit down, you watch it all day long, and then you tell everybody, like, oh, my God, go see it. And then when other people have seen it, you can't really get them, you know, I don't know. You're just, it's a harder conversation, as you said. So.
Yeah, I hope they maybe make change that, but I guess we'll see as time goes on. I mean, I'm not going to complain. It's $7.99 a month, and I get a shitload of good content, so.
Mm-hmm.
So be it. I can overlook that. That's fine. I'm not going to be like one of those people who are like, I'd want it my way, you know. Yeah. So,
I mean, one of the things I'm loving about Netflix is the fact that they're doing a lot of original series that a lot of networks are too afraid to do. And they can be grittier. They can be dirtier even. That's why I'm looking forward to Marvel. Going back to them again with we're doing Daredevil. They're doing Luke Cage. They're doing Jessica something. And they're doing Iron Fist. And then ultimately Defenders. And that's like, wow. You know, just mind-breaking right there. But, you know, so that's why I still support Netflix, even in spite of their model to go like, we're going to release everything all at once, you know, that, yeah.
So. Well, yeah, I'm really looking forward to that because, like, Daredevil's being done by the guy that did Cabin in the Woods.
Right.
So that to me has already got my interest. Yep. And I think it's cool. This might be one time that I think it would be cool to see this. Okay, we don't release all of these Defenders stories all at once. We should release them like comic books. Because, you know, in some way, and they may not end up doing this, but, like, I'm thinking that they're probably going to release all four of those simultaneously.
Yeah, maybe.
So it would be kind of cool to see, like, Daredevil be one episode, Luke Cage be the next, maybe Iron Fist, the way comic books happen.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool. I'll have them all.
I would like to see that one time, and I think this is the perfect medium for that to work.
You know, one thing we might have to do here, we might have to start it on the podcast, but like a viewing schedule. You know, just when those things start to come out again, we just make a pact and a commitment with each other to hold off and just watch them gradually, you know. Will that work? Well, I guess we'll find out, but I think it's an interesting little experiment. So.
Yeah, no, especially with that, I think we should. And I think we should maybe try doing... a House of Cards in real time.
Yeah, I think that would work too. That'd just be an interesting little experiment. Just try that out, talk about it as we go through.
And I don't care if that other show's done it, but I would really like to do some director's commentary type stuff too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm excited.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be a bad movie, so.
True, very true. Well, I'm definitely excited about everything that we talked about here on this podcast.
Me too.
I was going to say something else, and I'm like, oh, I totally forgot what that was. But, yeah, so I guess that covers everything.
It does, sir. It does.
Next podcast, I definitely want to go into RoboCop, which I think I mentioned in the first one that I was going to talk about. We haven't got around to talking about it. I have seen it. But maybe we'll just do a RoboCop conversation in the next episode, if you're okay with that.
If you're okay with talking to me about Hannibal.
Sure. And I'm going to actually try to watch that this coming week. Or at least, you know, start watching it just to get the vibe of the show. And
second season starts Friday night, and if anybody hasn't watched it, check it out.
How many episodes is season one?
13.
Okay, that's a good note. I like that. I actually like the 13, you know, episode season. So I'm going to try to sit down and watch that this week. So.
Awesome. Well,
all right, guys, thank you for joining us here on this episode of Straight Popcorn. Please go and follow us on Facebook. We are facebook.com/straightpopcorn. Also, we got a website coming very shortly. We just bought the domain. We just haven't had time to do anything with that. In the meantime, just join our Facebook page. You can also follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/straightpopcorn. So pretty much anywhere you go, the name of the podcast. All right, guys, that is it for this episode. I have been L. Nichols.
And I brought Vincent Sharp. Keep popping!
Keep popping, people. Goodbye. I let you down by the dirty wall. I feel your energy, it's so over the top. I won't accident you, but the one to let you on. Protection now. To lose, got a fire in my stomach coming over to you.